Hey everybody, and welcome back to Lisa at the Edge. In this episode, I am joined by Shannon Keane. Shannon is a senior cloud advocate at Microsoft, focused on VMware on Azure. Shannon shares the story of how she got into tech. It started with a move to Chicago to chase that DJ life, and then she found her calling. We discuss VMware on Azure, why MSP years are like dog years, and that your experience is valuable in the new world of cloud. We touch a little bit on diversity in tech and the female dynamic. Be aware there are bloopers in this episode. I debated editing them out. In fact, I stressed about it for 2 weeks thinking they were worse than they were. However, I've always said this podcast is about keeping it real, and this is as real as it gets. Lockdown has been taking its toll. I've been working more than I should, and it's beginning to show. But this podcast has been a lifeline during the last few months, and I just want to thank you all for listening. Enjoy the episode. I've got four more for you. And then Lisa at the Edge will be taking a break over the summer and back with a bang in autumn. Hey, Shannon. Welcome to the Lisa at the Edge podcast. Thank you so much for joining me.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
We have got you on today to discuss a few different topics. How you got into tech. It's another fantastic story that I can't wait to discuss with you. We're going to talk about VMware on Azure. I'm excited to learn more about that. And we can touch on a little bit on diversity in tech at the end. Does that sound good to you?
That sounds perfect.
Awesome. Okay, so before we get started, do you want to give us a little bit of an introduction to who you are?
Sure. My name is Shannon Keane. The last name looks like it's not pronounced Keane. I don't know what happened when my family migrated into America. I wonder if it's some flub that happened at Ellis Island. Who knows, right? But no, my name is Shannon Keane. I am a senior cloud advocate on the Enterprise Platforms and Tools team. I am on the same team as folks within the Methods and Practices group. So Sarah Lean, Thomas Marr, Sonia Cuff. There's a bunch of us. There's about 25 of us on that team, or 20 of us. And so what I focus on is I focus on evangelizing and talking about the specific platforms that we now support within Azure.
Awesome. Yeah, that's definitely, it's a big team full of a lot of cool people, right?
Yes. It is. Yeah. It is. And I am a little starstruck. I'm newer to the team. I started back in March, and these are the people I've been following for years and years and years. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my gosh, I had a little bit of imposter syndrome.
Mm-hmm. I hear you, because I'm right there with you on my team. But we are rock stars too in our own right. So,
I guess so. We'll own it. We'll figure out how to own it, I suppose.
Exactly. Okay. So you have a really cool story about how you got into tech. And I think it's funny because we were originally just going to focus on VMware on Azure, but then in our prep chat, I got to learn more of your story. And I was like, we need to share this, because I keep finding these brilliant stories of how people have got into tech. And I think it's really important to share them.
Totally.
It shows that, you know, people come to this industry from all different kinds of backgrounds. And I think that is what makes it so cool, and it's full of like really great people. So
totally,
let's talk a little bit about how you got here from DJing.
Sure. So when I went to college, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And mm-hmm. I sometimes feel like we are pushed into thinking about your majors a little too early in life.
Yes.
So I picked communication studies. I had done competitive high school speech, like they call it forensics in America, right? And I had done group drama, and then we cut up, you know, plays and we'll perform it in about 10 minutes, right? So that was a big part of my background. I did oratory a little bit as well. I did debate for 1 year in high school. It's one of those things where speaking felt natural to me. So I picked communication studies. But here's the thing, how do you pitch that to a future employer? I can speak well. Like, I mean, that's just a hard reality, right?
Yeah.
So I also, in college, got this inkling that I wanted to DJ. I had always been a huge fan of electronic music, and I had started going out to clubs and started to really follow a lot of folks in the area who had done DJing. And I really wanted to kind of go down that path. And so when I was right around 20, I moved out of my parents' house and bought my first turntable. Of course, I needed a second turntable to really properly DJ plus a mixer. So I had some hurdles in front of me and I had to figure out ways to fund this because my parents weren't just going to give me money, unfortunately. So so I went down the path of, you know, working odd jobs, making extra cash, funding the rest of the equipment. But then I had to figure out how to record a demo for promoters because they weren't going to just book me because I had two turntables and a mixer, right? I had to show them that I knew what I was doing.
Unfortunately, that's not enough.
So I decided to figure it out on my own, right? Probably the first round of troubleshooting I had done on my own because I had always leaned on my developer friends who'd always pull my leg, right? And I don't know if that's a term that you guys use in, okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes I use these terms and then people are like, what are you talking about? So, okay. So they used to love to pull my leg and like make me believe weird things. And I was like, you know what? I don't want to deal with that. I want to try and figure this out on my own. This can't be that difficult. And so I remember it probably took me longer than it would, definitely would today. Right. Mm-hmm. But I figured out a way to hook my mixer up, figured out a way to download software and to record my first demo. And I was really proud of myself.
Yeah.
And so I just kept digging a little bit deeper. And then I moved to Chicago in 2004. So I was 24 at the time. And kind of went into this weird state of, I was tired of being a big fish in a small pond back in Nebraska. That's where I'm from originally. Mm-hmm. And everybody kind of knew what I was doing. And I thought, well, gosh, this has been fairly simple to get to this point. Why don't I go take myself to, you know, becoming a small fish in a big pond? Mm-hmm. And and Chicago was definitely a lot. I don't know if I could do it now. Let's just leave it at that, right? Like I moved without a job. I was unemployed for about 2 or 3 months. And, you know, and then I found my first job and, you know, I was kind of backup IT support. I dealt with like Palm Pilots and Blackberries and Outlook not working right and Excel becoming a problem and PowerPoint. Right. So I did a lot of that and then kind of outgrew that role. And then I landed my first job that really became my first IT job. Right. I was originally hired on as an administrative assistant because that's the role I had at the first job I had in Chicago. I was an administrative assistant. Right. So dealt with, you know, travel expense reports, you know, helping them out with their documentation, et cetera. And they kind of were looking for somebody to fill in. And, you know, the group that we had help us out, they felt like they didn't really care the way that they would like them to care. And so they said, well, why don't you kind of start managing some of this? And so I was at that firm for 8.5 years, and over 8.5 years, I learned a ton, right? So we eventually decided to go with a different consulting group to help us manage things. So they were really instrumental in kind of helping me be the technologist that you see today, right? So they were awesome mentors. They always approach things like, there's never a dumb question. And I still use that to this day with customers and people I talk to. Yeah. There's never a dumb question. If you've got a question, I can make it simpler, or I can get you talking to somebody who can make it simpler, right? There's certain things I don't even know.
Yeah.
So I worked with them, and then that company also invested in my education. So really, that company was instrumental in terms of my whole career, right? They helped me transform myself from not having an IT background into having an IT background. And
that's amazing.
It's awesome. It was a fun reality. So by way of DJing and like troubleshooting and kind of figuring all that out and kind of building up that skill at my first job in Chicago, it landed me to my first, my second job in Chicago, but my first real true tech job.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting there is you mentioned the fact that the other team that were supposed to be in charge of some of this stuff, the business felt like they didn't care.
Yeah.
And they obviously seen that you did care. And you were the type of person that wanted to fix things, improve things, you know, saw a problem, wanted to solve it, wanted to make things better. So they were like, okay, cool. Well, why don't we focus and invest in you?
Yeah.
And I think that is so important for companies to do. It is never necessarily the people who come straight out the gate with apparently all the answers. The people that, going back to communication, can communicate across the business, who understand what the problems are, who care about getting them fixed. I think that that is such a large part of the industry that we're in that sometimes gets overlooked. And I think going back to as well, creating that environment for people to flourish is creating a safe environment where people can ask questions. I mean, I would not have flourished if I could not ask dumb questions. You know, the only way I've been able to get to where I am today and understand tech to the level I do is because I've asked.
It's true. I often say if I'm going up against a concept that doesn't make sense and I can't talk to somebody who can explain it to me like I'm a six-year-old,
yeah,
I'll go look on Google for how to understand, like, you know, I'll go look up, you know, something with maybe hitting a REST API, right? Or something with, you know, YAML was the thing I was noodling around with yesterday. And I discovered that there's an awesome little cool tool that can show you if it's actually formulated correctly. And I'm like, I don't know how smart we would have been without Google or without your search engine of choice, right?
So true. You can learn literally anything these days. There's a YouTube tutorial or someone has written a blog.
And right.
I have learned so much actually in the last 2 weeks. So I've been down a rabbit hole because I cannot embed my podcast into my WordPress blogs, right? So this is all
really?
Brand new. Yeah, all brand new stuff to me. However,
okay.
I have been down so many rabbit holes. I have learned about iframes, shortcode, SSL certificates, all kinds of stuff. I think what I've basically got down to is the fact that there is a plugin that I have that's causing issues.
Oh.
And I can manage that plugin because it's not connected to my WordPress dashboard. Oh. And I've done all kinds of troubleshooting and I've ended up just having to raise a ticket to the people to the people at the plugin. They're probably going to hate me. But I've done a lot of troubleshooting myself. So at least I was able to give them a ticket that says, I've tried X, Y, and Z. I think it's this.
Yeah.
So, but it's funny, right? You literally, I mean, I have learned so much in the last 2 weeks around these kind of things. And I really want to continue that and be able to manage these kind of things myself rather than asking someone else to do it. Because I've spent my life asking my tech friends to do things. And
eventually you just want to like learn it on your own, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And also they're like, Lisa, you literally work in tech now, please.
Figure out how to hook up your own computer or deal with your own mm-hmm. printer. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So moving then from that role to where you are now, what did that journey look like?
Sure. So after I was with that firm, and it was a real estate investment firm, right? So I worked with them for 8.5 years. I moved to a managed services provider. So I was a Windows engineer, as an L2 Windows engineer, and I was a global tech lead for a couple of customers that we had, and did, you know, kind of my expertise went from heavy on Windows Server, heavy on VMware, heavy on, you know, Exchange, to those skills brought me to my first real true tech job that I didn't come in as an admin or some other role. And I, you know, I took those Exchange skills, I plugged them into Office 365, did a pretty hefty migration at that firm, for that firm, I should say, because I wasn't part of that firm. I was their service provider, right? And then did a lot with VMware and kind of Windows Server on that front. So I had that role for about a year. And then, well, let's see. We call them system integrators at Microsoft. So I worked for a Microsoft partner for about a year, and the company was 10th Magnitude. And they kind of took a chance. I hadn't done a lot of heavy Azure work, but I had done enough with Office 365 and Azure Active Directory that they felt it would be an easy reality. Plus, my background was heavy in VMware and Windows Server and infrastructure in general. So I was there for about 2 years and did a lot with enterprise level customers who were just starting out with Azure, you know, taking them through kind of core enablement, taking them through understanding how to position themselves, build landing zones, and take them from solely on-premises to maybe hybrid or all in with Azure. So I worked for them for 2 years. And then, you know, the SIs themselves in the community, they do a great job of highlighting folks. And I had been on a handful of videos. I had done a blog post. We did a lot of great things at the time with talking about folks and their backgrounds and videoing all of that, right? So they had found me by way of probably searching, and Microsoft had expressed interest. And I mean, trying to get to Microsoft was like that North Star, right? I think everybody always dreams of that. I pinch myself daily because I'm like, I can't believe I'm at Microsoft, right? It's been an awesome reality, but I have a little bit of imposter syndrome sometimes. I'm like, I'm at Microsoft. I'm on this awesome team of people. Like, I guess I am that person, right? So, but it took me almost 6 months to get hired because it was a lot of back and forth trying to figure out, did I want to move all the way to the Seattle area? I chose not to. I chose to stay in the Chicagoland area. Okay. And, you know, landed in my first role at Microsoft, which was a cloud solution architect, which was very similar to what I had done at 10th Magnitude in the sense that I was helping customers architect and position themselves well to adopt cloud. And so I worked, you know, as a CSA, that's what we call it for short, at Microsoft for about 2 years and some change. And then I moved to the Cloud Advocates role, which has been an awesome reality.
That's a very cool story. So I think MSPs, managed service providers, they provide a whole lot of experience and training, don't they?
Oh, they really do. I feel like everybody always jokes that a dog year is like 7 human years.
Yeah.
I was with that firm for 1 year and it felt like I had gone through 7 years.
I think that we can draw that comparison. I think that we should put a number on how many years an MSP year is.
Yeah, right? Because it's hard. It's a long year. You're drinking from the fire hose, 100%.
Oh, yeah, right? Absolutely. Constantly. There's just so much going on all the time. You've got, because as well, your customers are always so different. Yes, yeah. They want to do roughly the same things, but they're at different stages. They have different skills. They have different tech. They have different ideas about where they want to go, and you have to kind of help them all get to where they want to go. So I always think, I mean, I'm so thankful for my time within MSPs. I still have a soft spot for them. I think they're a great place to learn. And then I was going to ask a question and I've never done this before in a podcast. I can't remember what it is.
I was going to say, it's probably early there, but I'm like, no, it's afternoon there.
Yesterday in a call, I felt so bad. I kept yawning and they were like, Lisa, you need to go for a nap. And I'm like, all I've done for the past 3 days is sleep. Like, I feel like lockdown is taking its toll.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, if it comes back, you can always ask and I would not be offended at all.
Good. Okay, good. Sorry to the listeners for this part, because I'm probably not going to edit it out either.
It's always fun though. Like, I always feel like these are better than sometimes the actual podcast. Like some of the blooper reels, some of the conversations that you have. It's like, no, these are real people having a real conversation.
Yeah. And that's definitely what I'm all about. So we'll just put it out there and see what happens. So I suppose over that time, moving customers from on-premises to cloud, very much infrastructure focused, IaaS heavy. And then moving more towards Cloud Solution Advocate at Microsoft and then into this team, have you had to make that transition that I've spoken to a few people about in terms of moving from that traditional sysadmin type role to doing more DevOps-y kind of things? Mm-hmm. And is that something that you've had to do?
Oh, for sure. So I often joke that if you would have come to me 10 years ago and you would have said I'd be working at Microsoft, people would be trusting the cloud and I'd be hitting REST APIs like developers, I probably wouldn't have believed you. Because at the time, I felt on-premises was more secure, more safe, you know, you could control it. Mm-hmm. Over the last 10 years, you can touch it, you can pet your servers, right? Yeah. There's been a huge shift. And so I've had to take my skill set. And now I joke that I can understand developers, right? So I used to just hate developers. And believe me, I will clearly say there's a reason, right? I'd never understood what they have to do, right? Yeah. And now developers are now having to understand networking and infrastructure, right? And how to position themselves from a security perspective. Yep. So what you're seeing is this weird, let's meet in the middle of the road here and let's realize that we can't continue to hang out in these siloed lands, right? Infrastructure folks need to understand how to hit REST APIs and how to do infrastructure as code, how to think about DevOps, standing up environments, doing configuration management, right? That's still a big heavy part of the traditional sysadmin's background right now, or that will be, I should say, because companies are embracing the cloud at a very different pace. It just depends upon the customer, right? Yep. And then developers now need to know how to deal with networking. So if you're very heavy in the world of Kubernetes or containers, you probably have to stand up a load balancer. You probably have to understand the right roles, or the right rules to present whatever you're trying to present to the world so that you're not exposing yourself and giving yourself, you know, open to attacks, right? So it's an interesting blend. And what I've found is all of the CSAs at Microsoft, you know, I used to be a part of what we would call the swarm team, and we'd all come in and I'd always bring a developer with me because, you know, at some point somebody's gonna ask a question, right? And I didn't do that prior to Microsoft. I understand what I understand now, but I was not the C# programmer. I was not the Java programmer, right? So I always try and bring those folks in the event it gets around to that conversation. So we would always try and bring, you know, a good representative from infrastructure, a good representative from development, and a good representative for data platform or data and AI. And we try and go and help customers out because they tend to see you and they want to then have a conversation with, how can we get ourselves to Microsoft, you know, to Azure? And then they want to ask you the smorgasbord of questions, which is fine. But I mean, our services are so vast that, you know, I used to hate when somebody asked me a question and I didn't have somebody with me when I was at 10th Magnitude because, you know, it's a different world, right? You're underneath an SOW and you're the sole person on that account. You are operating as one, whereas at Microsoft, we have a little bit better of a reality. You know, the CSA role comes out to a customer and they're not paying for you outright. Now, granted, if you aren't moving things forward, they eventually have to say, come back to us when you're ready. But I think that's an interesting proposition for enterprise customers to have that Sherpa guide getting you to Azure and then can pull and pluck resources in whenever it makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think something that's really important and that is not often done is, and I see this a lot, right? So in discussing Azure Stack Hub with customers, our sales team will be speaking to the infrastructure team. Mm-hmm. And they won't speak, either they have a separate conversation going on with the software development team and they won't bring them together and they are tackling two different streams. Yeah. Or they can't get to the software developer team. Now, when it comes to Azure Stack Hub, if the interest has come from the development team because they want to be able to use IaaS and PaaS services in a way that they use them on Azure, that's grand. But if we only focus on the software developer team and we trundle along and we get to the point where they want to buy an Azure Stack, the Azure Stack has to be managed by probably infrastructure people carry out the cloud operator role, right? They need to manage the capacity. They need to manage the backups. They need to do patch and update. They need to manage the marketplace. It's a slightly different role from maybe what they've been doing, but it's very much, you know, within that skill set. And without them both working together and understanding the dependencies that they'll have on each other or each other's roles, they're not going to succeed.
Oh, agreed.
And
agreed.
There's this... I don't know why, but there seems to be this, let's have a meeting with the customer. Let's only bring in, you know, a key person from this team. And we're only going to directly talk to this team. And I think that that's just the wrong way to go. Like, I love the approach there of taking someone in infrastructure, someone in data, and someone as a developer, right? Right from the beginning, because even if that developer is not called on in that meeting, or the data person isn't called on that meeting to begin with, they will know where that customer's starting and the journey that they're going through and probably be able to help a lot better and a lot quicker than you pulling them in 6 weeks down the line and having to catch them up.
Right. They'll have definitely have more context. And that was the whole point. And so the Swarm team, when it originally was kind of in its incubation phase, we would target customers that were still mainstream customers. They still hadn't spent a ton and they were kicking the tires, trying to make Azure work. And our whole goal was to kind of graduate them to that strategic kind of level, right? Where they were consuming more Azure. They were doing more innovative work. They were transitioning workloads from on-prem into Azure. And maybe they were even using hybrid strategies to manage environments. And so, you know, it's an interesting proposition, right? Because what Microsoft had done prior to the last handful of years was they would focus on those strategic customers that were consuming a lot of Azure. Yeah. They would get a CSA. And so now there's been this huge push to also target these other customers that could easily become strategic customers, right? And it's just a matter of they need some TLC. You need to go water those plants because, I mean, it's one of those things where we've got a lot of great how-tos, you know, and we keep revamping them and taking them up to that kind of that next level. But sometimes certain folks need somebody there just as training wheels. And so I always feel like that's another kind of role the CSA fulfills is, how do I make use of these new tools? Well, can you be my training wheels while I get comfortable with what this looks like? And it was always an awesome proposition to go into a customer and get them amped up about the cloud and getting them excited about what they can do. And then, you know, another thing too, I used to see a lot of anxiety, right? And this will lead into kind of my role now, the sense that, you know, folks would think I was taking their job away from them. And I'm like, no, I'm teaching you how to do your job better.
Yeah.
But now we've got the whole proposition of being able to think about bringing a platform into Azure. Yeah. Right. And it's the same platform that it took you a while to buy into, but you love it. Right. And you believe in it and you trust it. Guess what? That platform now can exist in Azure, and you can have an environment where you can do the same work that you were doing on-prem in Azure. And you don't have to necessarily worry about upskilling, because what we had done prior to that platform being there was we'd say you had to go learn IaaS out the gate. You have to go learn about ARM templates and PowerShell this and AZ CLI that. Right. And it's a
whole
lot.
New set of tools, whole new set of skills. Yeah, it is.
Oh, I lost you for a second. Did I lose you?
Oh, hello.
Hang on. Hang on. Let me see. I don't know if you want to pause it for a second. I lost your audio. I don't know if it's me or you.
Hmm.
Let me see. Is there? We'll see. Okay.
Does my speakers are still connected? My microphone.
Select speaker. Okay, hang on a second here. I'm going to do. Try chatting now.
Hello?
Yep. Okay, there we go. So I think I had to reboot my computer, because all of a sudden it stopped on my speakers, and so I'm using my laptop speaker.
Oh no.
It's fine. I have been prolonging the inevitable. I knew I was gonna have to reboot it today, and I just didn't get up in time to reboot it before this call. So
that's okay. I will be able to edit this a little bit. Definitely.
Okay. Or, I mean, you could leave it in too. I think it's a funny reality of prolonging the inevitable.
Yeah, very true. And also I'm a bit lazy. Just leave it in. So yeah, asking people to move their workloads from on-prem to the cloud is one thing. Asking them to basically chuck away everything that they've been working on for the past few years in terms of skills, knowledge that they've gathered, experience, and learn a whole new set of skills. Now, it's not that that's the wrong thing to do. It's just that it's a massive ask. And if you do not have the time and the buy-in and the resources, and you don't have basically everyone aligned and everyone on this really happy cloud journey, and everyone's bought in and everyone understands the effort and the time it's going to take. And if that's not there, it's a really hard ask for customers. And also, people get left behind, and it's a shame. So let's talk about then VMware on Azure.
Right. So we're at the point where we've had our first iteration, right? And our first iteration leaned on a partner, Cloud Simple. We did have customers move toward that solution, but we've taken some of that feedback and some of the real-time learnings, and we now have a version 2.0 that's in the middle of a public preview at the moment.
Yeah.
And what it does is it's a bare metal offering, right? So customers get excited that they have the option of not having to share resources with other customers. Those bare metal servers belong to that customer, and there's a whole process of getting that aligned with the customer, right? And you have to have a 3-node minimum cluster built, right? Okay. It's a little bit of a sizable investment, but what we found is the target audience is those big, gigantic enterprises that have a fleet of VMware admins, right? So if you think about upskilling those folks, that's going to take time, that's going to take money, that's going to take them away from their job. And so building out a platform for them to go take their skills to was an easier reality for a number of fronts, right? And so there's this option now to think about plugging VMware into Azure for your environment. And then you've got the concept of being able to access both environments, dependent upon what you normally do. So if you've got something built out or you have a specific workflow, you can take that workflow and move it into Azure and do the same thing in Azure where you're not managing the physical infrastructure side of things.
Yeah. So when we caught up about this, because I won't lie, I was not up to speed on what VMware on Azure meant, and I've been skeptical around the move of VMware and having offerings in AWS and having offerings in Azure. And I, to be brutally honest, just didn't know that much about it. But when we caught up, I think that's insane, right? The fact that you can have bare metal servers dedicated to you, which, like you say, lots of customers still don't like the shared resource situation.
Right.
But the fact that you can basically have that as a service from Azure.
Yeah.
So you basically remove a whole chunk of time and effort in managing those.
Yep. Which I find
is crazy. And I love the fact that then you get the best of both worlds, right? So like when you were explaining it to me, you can take those skills, that experience, your workloads, what you know today, you can run it in Azure, and then you can use Azure to augment those workloads if you want.
Correct. And at a time that's more convenient for you, yeah. Right? So I think of it as, you know, everything getting into Azure is an achievement unlocked. This is an easier way for you to get those VMs into Azure by way of using vMotion and the HCX technologies that VMware has built out. So you can vMotion that VM from on-prem into Azure without having to spin up, without having to spin up an Azure Site Recovery configuration server or lean on Azure Migrate, right? It's not to say those tools are bad tools, because those tools are still the tools that I always recommend to customers.
Yeah.
But if your enterprise is excited enough about VMware on Azure, it's another tool in the toolkit. You can move your VMs seamlessly and effortlessly into Azure.
That's amazing. So you can use the tools that you are used to using, like vMotion, to migrate your VMs into VMware on Azure. You don't need to refactor, rebuild, use Azure Migrate, use Azure Site Recovery. Again, you can just basically just use the tools.
Exactly.
That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's an awesome reality. So for a long time, we've always met the developer where the developer is, especially the .NET developer. We're even getting better about meeting Java developers where they are and Golang developers. Maybe it's just Go developers. P.S. I'm not really a developer. I just play one on TV. and then now we're exposing things like Rust. And so there's a lot we're trying to do to do develop, like reach those developers where they are. We're now focusing on the IT pros, right? And so, you know, we're now trying to show them that we're meeting you where you are versus having all this anxiety ridden conversation of you're taking my skills away. You're taking my VMware farm away. So no, we've got a something for you. And then Microsoft will deal with your power supply failures. Microsoft will deal with patching your ESXi host. Microsoft will deal with all of the physical sides of those bare metal servers. All you have to focus on is your guest OS provisioning, configuration management, et cetera, right? So keeping your applications up and resilient, that's all you have to focus on. Whereas if it's in your own environment, you have to do the full managing everything.
Yeah. You sent me over, and obviously our listeners will not be able to see this, but there's a shared responsibility matrix for this solution, right?
And
just looking at that, there's a whole lot there that's basically taken away from you. And like you say, you need to just, you're mainly focusing on configuration, your guest OS applications and your virtual machines.
Right.
And then with that time that you've got back, you can then start to pick an Azure service to augment and add value to and learn about, or begin to move towards that infrastructure as code. So spend time getting that right.
Right.
But basically you're moving workloads that you know and love with skills that you have into Azure. You're getting a whole chunk of time back that you can then use to upskill in a way that suits you.
Correct. And then you've got your applications are still available to your end users. So they're not going to submit tickets and get ticked off, right? They'll get ticked off. It's just end users, but they won't get, because their applications will be there. Yeah. And so, you know, you've got time to learn infrastructure as code. You've got time to learn about some of these cloud native tools, because once you get into Azure, you're so much closer to all of these Azure resources and all of these Azure services that you keep hearing about. So you could explore Azure Security Center, explore Azure Monitor, think about, you know, Azure Active Directory in terms of authentication versus leaning on Kerberos, which is what the traditional sysadmins very familiar with. It changes things ever so slightly, but I think of this as less of a deal breaker than forcing somebody straight into IaaS, because I've seen customers who were seemingly super excited. You take them through the whole motion of getting them into Azure and then they go dark, which tells you they weren't ready, right? Yeah. That happened a lot, unfortunately. And if we could solve for human nature, I think this is the closest thing we can do to solve for human nature. We give them like for like, and we say, hey, here's your VMware platform. It's just now in Azure versus on-prem. And hey, there's less you have to worry about and manage and maintain. You can start to think about operationalizing those skill sets and getting yourself to that kind of that next level.
Yeah, that is very cool. So yeah. How long is the public preview for?
So that's a good question. I don't have particulars, but I know that it's supposed to GA sometime this year.
Okay.
So, you know, and you think about, it's been a weirder year in general. Mm-hmm. And we, yeah. you know, there's still the Ignite timeframe that might be a possibility to think about, right? Yeah. It's just hard to say, but sometime this year, this service will GA, and we should see it in more regions this time too.
Yeah.
So there's some awesome realities there from just a locational perspective. Whereas the first iteration of what we had, I think it was only like 2 or 3 regions. So that kind of left customers a little ticked off.
Yeah.
And so again, you know, we're iterative. We're trying to build out the right tools for customers.
Yeah.
And we want to get them into Azure, right? And I mean, and we don't even care if you pick apart and, you know, go a different route. You could just stay on VMware, right? We don't mm-hmm. even care. If you're happy with the service and you're happy with the fact that you only have to call Microsoft in the event that you have problems, Microsoft will then lean on VMware to help with the VMware components. There's an awesome kind of reality there, right? So we're excited to have customers come, hang out in the platform, build what they normally build, and do what they normally do. And, you know, they can pick apart and take on Azure, or they could just choose to stay 100% VMware on Azure. I mean, we yeah. really don't care. We just want to have a spot for these sysadmins to live in this world of Azure without feeling so apprehensive. The anxiety-ridden conversations start to go away.
Yeah.
And we have like for like, it's an awesome, we're meeting them where they are finally.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really exciting and really interesting. I'm excited to see how that goes. And I think, yeah, you're right. It will depend on what sites, et cetera, it's available on.
Right.
If it's, and I suppose that's difficult, right? Because you guys have got now like how many sites? It's like almost 60. Or more than that has been enough.
I want to say if you count all the sovereign stuff, I think it's over 60.
Yeah.
I don't, but I mean, it's one of those things where the regions keep getting lit up and I keep hearing about it and I'm like, this is nuts. So, you know, it's an interesting reality. In the cloud, it moves so quickly that it's even hard for us to keep up internally at Microsoft, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's to be, if you understand the size of that operation, the fact that those sites, locations, regions, etc., need to be so consistent in the way that they are built, managed, expanded, that if you're going to come along and you're going to lump in bare metal servers to those, it's going to take time, right? Because that's a change in operating model to be able to accommodate that. I think it's a really great example of how much Microsoft are investing, though, and it shows that Microsoft really are interested in being. They're interested in being the platform.
Yes.
For your workloads.
Well, and we're changing a lot too. Like we're trying to partner with everybody versus Windows is the best, right?
Yeah.
I think as we just discovered with my losing sound for a bit, Windows sometimes needs to be rebooted, right? So the idea here that we've explored all these partnerships, that we're enriching those partnerships, and that we're all this care and feeding is being put into these partnerships, it's showing. And we've got folks who are partnering with Microsoft now that probably 5-10 years ago were, you know, ticked off, right? They didn't want to partner with Microsoft. They were,
absolutely.
You're ruining my ecosystem. I'm not going to, you know, and then of course too, people were super shocked that we offered a VMware on Azure offering, right? Mm-hmm. Because VMware was a direct competitor to our Hyper-V platform. So it's a great reality to see them kind of move forward and get past all of that and realize it's better to be partners than it is to be, you know, antagonistic toward one another.
Yeah, exactly. And I think anyone that was very surprised has not got with the times in terms of
you're very right. Very right.
Where Microsoft is, because, and I've said this before, and someone said I'd probably upset the hypervisor team at Microsoft, but Microsoft are not playing the hypervisor game anymore.
No.
They're playing the platform game. Now, of course, there is still Hyper-V, right? We've got Azure Stack, HCI, etc. But again, that is playing the hypervisor game, but in line with Azure. The whole point is to bring Azure capabilities on-prem to Azure Stack HCI and be able to connect up to Azure, et cetera. It's not just a, hey, we're a hypervisor, we do virtualization. They've not been in that game. They've moved on, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think of it like a lot of the big giants, right? Like we're iterative. We're trying to experiment and figure out what makes the most sense. Yep. And we realized that VMware was a leader. And not that Hyper-V was bad. It's just, it was kind of, we always had to play catch up, right? Yep. And now Hyper-V's where VMware was. So I think of them as kind of almost the same. They're not, but they're almost the same, right? It's yeah. the iPhone Android debate, right? Yeah. It's a matter of personal preference. That's really what it comes down to anymore. Yeah. And I think we kind of realized it made more sense to focus on the platform and get in with all of these customers who are doing all kinds of interesting things, right? Like you see yeah. the way that our machine learning models are and the way that machine learning has helped out a bunch of customers, right? And data analytics, and now everybody has data at their fingertips where they didn't have it before. And yeah. so, you know, we're realizing that we've got a platform where we can plug a lot of different types of workloads in, address a lot of IT concerns, and get folks more agile. I think that's yeah. the hard part, you know, because, you know, going back to what we talked about earlier, the whole reason those silos existed was because it was a very waterfall sort of thing.
Yeah.
We had 50 people in a room making a decision, and guess what happened? The decision never got made. So you have yeah. technical debt. And so now it's like, well, how do we break apart this whole big, gigantic effort and make it faster, because the cloud is moving. It's moving fast, and it's hard for folks to keep up, right? Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's about creating a platform, an opportunity for basically human beings to change their behavior.
Yes.
To basically throw away what they've known and how they've worked for quite some time, and come closer together in this new DevOps world.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny. Like when I was a consultant at 10th Magnitude, I used to joke with my customers that I got a 2-for-1, right? Like I was a technical consultant and an architect. I could get them excited about Azure and get them moving to Azure successfully. I was also a part-time therapist, because it's a lot. It's a lot to change a customer, right? And there's digital disruption happening left and right. And it's there's a lot of feelings and a lot of anxiety mm-hmm. and a lot yep. of let's talk it out. And I've worked with customers who get it, right? Like I think I was telling you about this. I'll talk about it for a second here. One of the customers I worked with prior to Microsoft, they kind of split up the centralized IT model, and they started yes. placing IT people with business units, which was an awesome reality. So it showcased that in order to move this forward and to have them keep up with the times, they needed a technical person at the table, right? Maybe that person didn't get called upon because they don't need to know, you know, the intricacies of a particular app, right? Because it's doing something that they don't care about. But when it comes time to talk about networking, isn't it nice to have them in the room? It is. And so yeah. they really kind of broke apart this whole notion of central IT as its own. And then, you know, everybody else is on this different path, right? Or this different area yeah. of the business. So
I like that. Noah, you made it. I was going to laugh there when you said, isn't it nice to have someone in the room when you're going to talk about networking? Because how many times does networking get forgot about? That just takes me right back to back in the day at MSP land. Like, people just don't think about networking. Like,
ever. No, they like, don't. They don't.
That can be fixed yeah. after the fact. Like,
yeah, networking and security, and those are the folks that, you know, you bring them in, and those poor folks haven't talked to people for a while because they get forgotten about.
Yeah.
So, and it's funny too, because some of the networking folks that I've talked to, I just have to bring a networking person in, somebody who's sat behind a router and a switch their entire career.
Yeah.
Because I've done it to a point, but I mean, they want to go deep. And yeah. we've got those deep folks at Microsoft, but it's always helpful to have that preliminary call with a customer too. Like, what do you guys want to talk about? Like, we're here talking about whatever. We want a whole session on networking. Okay, cool. Well, I know who to bring, you know? PS is not going to be me, because at some point I'm going to be like, I got to tap out. Like, I didn't yeah. do this professionally. Yeah. One of my colleagues, he's a deep networking dude now. He was a longtime app dev guy, developed for years and years and years. And once networking had an API to hit, he became this like networking nerd. And what's funny is to watch him go into customers, because they assume he's been the guy that's been behind routers and switches. And he's like, yeah, I never did that. Which is always hilarious. So you're starting to see these weird hybrid sort of roles yeah. where somebody can code and build cool solutions surrounding networking, but they never racked and stacked equipment themselves. It's a different age right now that yeah. we're living in.
I think basically what that just shows is there's so much opportunity. Like,
yes.
don't be scared about someone taking away your job. There are so many more roles being born out of all of this. Roles yes. that we don't even know that we need anymore. And right. all of, or need that, know that we need yet. And all of the skill and experience that you have is going to be valuable.
Yeah, exactly.
It absolutely is.
And I was learning the fundamentals are still there too. Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I was learning about backup the other day again, and it was so funny. It was like ringing bells, like from like years and years ago, talking about. I was about to use some terminology, and I'm scared now. Scared that I'm going to get it wrong. So I'm not going to do that. Not going to show up yet. But I was honestly, we're having a deep shout out to Michael Wells, my teammate. Tuesday afternoons have turned into Michael teaches Lisa things.
Good. So you always need those people though.
Oh, he's absolutely brilliant. Like he's got amazing patience. You know that no question is stupid for him. And he genuinely has a brilliant like pace at delivering what he's saying, and he takes you through from beginning to end. And I love that kind of teaching. Like, don't assume that I don't want to know about the depths and the beginning kind of thing. Take me all the way through, because it'll help my understanding. And right. I don't even know how we got onto that tangent. Oh yeah, so things like your experience that has gone before will absolutely still be relevant in this new world. And it absolutely is in the world of hybrid. Like 110% is required.
Right. I used to have all of this in imposter syndrome, especially when I first started at Microsoft, because I had been developed. I mean, I was later in life IT person, right? My first technical job I got when I was 26.
Yeah.
And that seems ancient by the fact that some of my peers started developing when they were like 15, 13, 12, who knows, right? And I realized that what they had done back then, yes, it was relevant, but it's not necessarily current. I mean, it's clearly not, right? Like, and it's one of those things where what's been relevant the last 3 to 4 years, and I've been in IT then. So it's a different world now that we're moving so fast and we're not shipping boxed product anymore. You know, the exchange skill set's kind of dying, is slow. I mean, it's evolving. It's not really dying. Like the on-prem managing, you know, your exchange servers, that skill set's kind of going away, but dealing with Office 365 is going to be a part of the mix now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, SharePoint, same sort of thing, right? Moving to SharePoint online. So these boxed products are less and less important. And it's more about how do you evolve your skill set and how do you take what you know and plug it into Azure. So it's been an interesting reality. And all the customers I've worked with and all the people I've worked with, you know, I kind of realized that there's this, because I had anxiety coming into all cloud, right? Mm. I was a little worried about what is my job going to look like, you know, and I always wanted to stay one or two steps ahead of the curve. And now that I am, it's like, well, how do I keep staying ahead of the curve? Because I feel like eventually the curve's going to catch up to me. And I'm like, how do I keep keeping up over here? What do I do?
But you're part of an awesome team, and you've all got different skill sets as well. I really like that. You can all like work together. But focus on different things.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
It's a cool reality. Plus, you know, there's a lot of collaboration that we're trying to work on too, to try and, you know, bring the team together, right? Because all of us report up through Donovan Brown, and Donovan Brown's the guy that's done he's Mr. DevOps, right? Rub a little bit of DevOps on it, right? And so he's a big, big believer of us kind of cross-pollinating in between the teams and trying to figure out ways of collaboration. So it's nice to have that reality versus, oh, you have to just focus on this, or you can only focus on this. And so,
yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. It's nice.
And then you can lead by example. Like you were saying before, like when you used to go into customers, you're a part architect and you're a part therapist.
Right.
Like that's so true. Like you need to be able to resonate with the people you're speaking to.
Right.
Been there, done that, understand your fears. Here's how I got through it. Here's how we do it. And I think that it's important to take the time to solve those issues. Or like you say, there are going to be those customers that you get onto Azure and go dark. Are there going to be those customers that don't ever get the success that they could get because they just weren't ready as a culture to do so? Well, we've just chatted for solidly for about 50 minutes there.
Ooh, look at that. See, it's also effortless when you're talking to somebody who you're a great conversationalist. I think we had the same thing when we went through our prep. I think our prep went long too. But that always helps, right? And I love talking with women in the tech industry, because I think we bring perspective into the mix here, whereas this world's been dominated by a bunch of men, unfortunately. Or fortunately, because now that's starting to shift in favor of diverse opinions and perspectives, right? And we're starting to see this interesting shift now, where 10 years ago, it was probably just budding, right? And more water's been applied and people have been doing the TLC motions to kind of make that be a full grown, you know, plant. And now we're starting to flourish.
Yeah, I think as well. So I think I only had maybe one or two females in my first bunch of podcasts. And I wanted to try and get at least 50% of this bunch of episodes. So I think that's when I put the call out, and then Sarah Lean tagged me in about 20 females. I've got a list to go back and hopefully get more people on in the next bunch. But cool. I think you're right. I think something I spoke to with another guest that's coming on, Barbara, we had a bit of a conversation about the different dynamics that a female can bring to the room or the discussion. So right. We were talking about basically just how quite often men will open up to you about maybe their own imposter syndrome or maybe a discussion that they've had with another colleague who's also male, and they tend to just be more open and a bit more direct. And I think we bring a different dynamic to the table quite a lot within teams, within one-to-one conversations. And I think females in general tend to create quite a welcoming and openness that maybe isn't there as much, or it's you know, it takes a lot of work for an all-male team to get there.
Yeah, because guys are, and it's no discredit to the men that I know, but guys are always trying to kind of beat their chest, and you know, that's that whole motion is starting to shift and change as we're getting to this point where we can't continue to be that way.
Yeah.
But there's still some folks who want to go that route, and that's still kind of something that's hard for folks to just let go of, right?
Yeah.
But having a woman in the room is an interesting reality, because you get folks to kind of lighten their guard. Their guard's not up, right?
Yeah.
They get to be a little bit more real, and they get to tell you about the problems that they're having. I mean, it's not to say everybody's the same, but I definitely share some similar sentiments.
Yeah, I don't think everyone's the same at all. Like, I know plenty of guys who very much, you know, when they're in a room together, we've got a team meeting or whatever, it's a very open and safe and trusting environment, and people can ask questions, and you know, they're not worried about looking like they don't know what they're talking about. But I do think, like we spoke about previously, the need for this environment. So one of the biggest, I've said this like 10 times now on my podcast, but one of the biggest barriers to innovation is fear, right? Fear of being wrong, mm-hmm. fear of failure, fear of all that kind of stuff. And I think as a industry, and maybe more so, you know, just the way we've been as a world, we've created an environment where you have to be right. You can't fail. You know, if you are wrong, it's like this big disaster. And actually what we need is the opposite of that to be able to innovate, embrace cloud, you know, like going back to the whole developer and operations thing, like, you know, you used to hate developers. Developers always hated ops people, like, because they just never understood each other.
Right.
And they didn't, they seen each other as a problem because they never sat down and talked about, well, what is it that you do you need? Because probably devs were really, like, they didn't understand anything about ops. And they maybe didn't want to show that. And ops were like, well, I can't speak this dev speak. So, you know, so, and I think that's like the world we've been in, and to get to where we need to go and to embrace and get as much as we can out of the technology that we now have available to us, right? Because it's not technology that's holding us back anymore. The technology is there. In fact, the technology is like, sometimes you're like, that's so cool. I have no idea how to apply it in real life.
Right.
And the only way we're going to get there and get to be able to harness that really cool tech is by really breaking down the way that we've been working and being a much more like open and inclusive.
And it feels uncomfortable for some folks, especially folks who are later in life. They've been in tech for the last 20 plus years.
Yeah.
But I think we're at the dawning of a new age. And I think the only way for us to move forward in a fast fashion and take advantage of all of these great technological innovations is to really come together. And I love seeing more females in tech. I think it's something where over the course of my career, it's been a small percentage, but it's been an awesome percentage. Like, I've worked with some really sharp female tech folks over the years who've really helped me bring my skill set up. Prior to me leaving my first kind of tech job, I had only been around dudes. And so then I started getting more exposure to women in tech, and I have learned so much from them, right? Like, it's not about taking over the world, right? I think a lot of women think what they need to do is when they get into tech is to take over the world. Well, I mean, hey, I wish we could, but it's going to be a slower to get to that point, I suppose, right?
We spoke about this, and I really love this this thought process. Sorry, I was rude.
No. So it's just the whole notion of, so when I was younger, my last job in Nebraska before I moved, I worked for a loan processing company, right? So student loan servicing. And the woman who was the boss of this team of, I think it's about 50 of us, I always appreciated her perspective, right? She always brought a really great, clear, sound approach, but she was always inclusive. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, my going away, there were drinks and I felt a little more comfortable to ask this, right? Liquid courage. Mm-hmm. I asked her, you know, I said, can I ask you a question? She's like, sure. I said, how do you do what you do? And she's like, it's not really about taking over the world. It's about owning your world,
yes,
right? Knowing your world, owning your world. And it's a small little slice of the world. And then that kind of starts to speak in waves, and it goes and it permeates out. And I was like, first off, I was a little buzzed. So my mind was kind of like mind blown. Yeah. But then from there, I've always tried to approach life that way, because, you know, if you are a specific way and you're inclusive and you make sure that, you know, you're getting everybody's perspective and you're trying to unify a team of folks, that starts to permeate. And it keeps moving in waves, and eventually we get to the point where women take over the world. Not really. That's not really the end goal is. But you know, to go back to that joke,
we just want equality, okay?
Yeah, fair.
like, please just calm down.
Yeah, right. And it's not that like women want to like take over, right? Right. We want equality. We want to be thought of as an equal person, and it's hard because human nature for so long has done this weird world of, you know, positioning a specific part of this world to be the superior part of the world. And
yeah,
I think everybody knows it's that time's gone. And so, you know, it's all about kind of knowing that world that, you know, kind of making sure that you continue to kind of treat people the same way that you'd want to be treated. And I mean, I literally was like, it makes sense, but it seems like such a simple, straightforward thing that it's been able to be successful for her over the course of her career.
I think it's leading by example, right? And I'm all for that. I think if you take ownership of, like you say, your world, you lead by example, you constantly, you know, you're checking are your values in check? Are you being who you say you are? Are you being who you'd want your teammate or friend or someone to be? Are you as well? Because I think another big part of it is, are you thinking about other minorities or people who are underrepresented as well? Are you trying to be inclusive and bring everyone in? And I think we spoke about this as well, like part of being or taking care of your own world is knowing your shit, just being great at your job, you know, just focusing on you. I mean, you can only control what you can control, and I think I've struggled with that quite a lot in my life. Like, I want to solve all the problems. I want to solve the world's problems,
and
all that kind of stuff. But I've had to learn to really focus on where I can influence and where I can make an impact, but focus on that and make sure that I'm doing that to the best of my ability. And what inspires me the most, and what I think has the biggest impact in terms of showcasing women in tech, is when you showcase a woman in tech either talking about or doing the thing that she's great at. I think, yes, there is a place to, and we've said this before, you know, on the podcast, I think there is a place for talking about and sharing experience as a woman in tech, the different things we maybe experience or have to deal with. But I think what's a lot more valuable is just having the likes of yourself or the likes of Sarah in videos from Microsoft, up on stages, speaking, doing their thing, owning it.
Yeah,
because I think that is something that everyone can relate to. And in the subconscious, they're like, oh, and that's a female doing that. And that has far more impact than someone standing up on stage and talking about how they need to, like, you know, and I'm not whittling, like, I'm not saying that this is important, but thinking about how they need to dress, act, etc. They're all things that we do need to consider, but I think the biggest impact is made by going up on a stage, being in a video, walking into a meeting, and just being fucking excellent at your job, basically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think at the end of the day, we're all people, right? Like, I've met people at Microsoft and I get a little starstruck, right? But then I remember to myself, they're people, right? And, and we're all people. And we're, you know, yeah, we have differences, but we should now be celebrating those differences and trying to figure out how to work together, right? And I kind of think of that as like Microsoft's mantra of trying to work with all these companies that they used to be positioned against for so long. And, you know, it's a different reality. And you know, we're promoting that inclusivity. We're promoting all of the awareness and trying to make sure that every voice is represented. And I, you know, I'm just very thankful that Microsoft chose to hire me, because literally I was like this. I mean, I wish I could have recorded myself in that interview process. I think I like drenched my entire shirt, because I had like a blazer on, my undershirt. I was so nervous that I think it was like sopping wet, because I was like just sweating. But I mean, it's a scary reality. Like when the giant expresses interest, and you're going into this interview and you're like, I don't know, like what do I have to offer that's like really unique and interesting? So then it's like a matter of, well, then showcase your personality, right? Because technology can all be learned, right? Mm-hmm. You can always bring yourself up to speed. But if you've got a personality that people will gel with, and you're an inclusive type person where you're trying to just be there and be kind of a point person, or be there and be influential however you can, I think that speaks boundaries. And I feel like you're starting to see more of this now, because people are paying attention, whereas they weren't paying attention 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, you know, because it was kind of a weirder world then. Yeah. We were at the dawning of all of this change, but now like the plant's growing and it's going to be interesting to see what happens another 5 to 10 years from now related to unique perspectives that are brought into tech. Right. And you know, it's a, I can't imagine any other time to be alive and around. This is a fantastic time to be involved in tech. And, you know, I always am a big, huge proponent of, if there's a young woman that wants to go into tech, I always try and, you know, get her prepped for it, right? And talk to her. I've mentored folks over the years. I've even mentored young guys, which I always appreciate, because it takes a lot for a guy to say, I want to go talk to a female about this.
Yeah.
And this person's at Microsoft. And, you know, I don't know, it's a unique reality to get folks to be able to come talk to you and to work with you. And I think it's a big, huge reason why, you know, I found successes when I've had these roles at Microsoft, you know, getting folks to kind of come together versus being adversarial and antagonistic. Because at the end of the day, we all have similar goals that we want to try and match and meet. Right. Yeah. And how can we work together? Right. How can we work together better? Even, let's be honest. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. Absolutely. Love it. Love it. Well, this has been an awesome chat.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining. I honestly am so thankful for, I'm so glad that I started this podcast. Like, I'm so glad that I got over the fear of, oh my God, is it? Because regardless if anyone's listening or anyone else is enjoying it, this has got me through lockdown, and it's been so awesome to meet like really cool people like yourself. So thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'll keep that in mind. If there's anybody else that I know that might be interested to chat with you, because there's other folks on our team I don't know if you've met yet. So we'll keep the dialogue going, and I'll figure out if there's anybody who would want to, you know, join and just talk with you for a bit, you know, cause it's a fun time. We're all struggling with what this looks like, right? It's not an easy year. 2020 just needs to be over, and it's not. So how do you get through?
I keep saying, is 2020 the unraveling and end of the world, or are we about to go through a major like spiritual awakening?
You know what's funny is I think it's the latter, potentially. Mm-hmm. That's how about this? That's what I hope it is. Because I hope this is not ending.
Yes. We've just spoke about how an awesome time it is.
Right. And then we're in the middle of this crappy pandemic. Nobody could have foreseen this.
I think it's a spiritual awakening. I think there is a lot of bad going on. There's a lot of bad being unearthed. I have seen and heard both locally and globally lots of topics recently that have come to the fore. And, you know, I was speaking to my best friend about it the other day, and she was like, I just want some good news. Like, I want all this bad stuff to go away. And I said, the thing is that all these things have been going on in the world and we've not been paying attention, or they've been hidden. Whereas what we're doing is we're pulling back the rug and we're showing all the ugliness, But the only way we can like go forward as a planet and stop these things happening is if we look at them dead in the face.
Yep.
And take them on. And I think the 2020 is the start of that.
That's what I hope. And yep. It's just a matter of, I think we gotta get through this pandemic. We gotta see where we land next year.
Yes.
And I think next year is the year of rejoicing is what I like to think of.
Yes. Well, fingers crossed we will be landing somewhere on a plane, right. Like right. Elsewhere from here. Like I have not left the area of Dundee since March. Like I'm totally insane. Like
hopefully at some point we get to meet. I think that would be a fun reality too.
That
so.
Would be awesome. I'll come to Chicago.
There you go. Or I mean, I've always wanted to go to Scotland. So maybe I can get my way out there. I don't know.
You can come to Scotland anytime. We can go, you know, on a whiskey tour.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Yeah. I love it. I love it. So okay. Cool.
Thanks, Shannon. So good Thank to have you. You on. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.